It's On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Celeste Headlee. And now we welcome another Celeste in the house. Author Celeste Ng published her debut novel, Everything I Never Told You, in 2014. With its deft commentary on modern life, the book won several awards and was released in several languages. Ng's follow-up novel is Little Fires Everywhere, and it is out this month. The book follows a picture-perfect suburban family whose peace is threatened by an outsider. She will appear for a reading at SCAD Show in Atlanta tonight at 7 p.m. Now get ready to keep your Celestes straight. My colleague Celeste Headlee spoke with Celeste Ng earlier this month.
You know, this book is pretty firmly placed, and you keep reminding us, the reader, that it's during the time of the Clinton and Monica Lewinsky scandal. Why that era?
Well, the first reason was that was an era that I knew really well. I would have been in high school at the same time as the teenagers in the novel, and so that was an era that I could write about with a lot of familiarity, but also some distance and some perspective, I hope. But the second was that was an era that it's recent enough for us to remember, but it's far enough back that things were a little bit different. We didn't really have cell phones. The internet wasn't really a big presence. It was really still possible for people to hide secrets from their past in a way that it's much harder to do now. And so I wanted to set the book at a moment where characters such as the ones in the novel could maybe keep some parts of their lives a secret.
So was there a community that you knew well on which you based Shaker Heights?
There is. Shaker Heights is actually a real community. It was my hometown from about age 10 until I went away to college, and it was a place that I loved and still love. It was a wonderful place to grow up. If you picture sort of suburban, nice houses, there's a tree on every lawn. It was really just a wonderful, wonderful place to spend my adolescence. And it was only after I moved away and was living on my own as an adult that I started to see, oh, a lot of things about this community are actually not typical at all, from the amount that it's planned to the layout of the streets and the amount of detail and attention that the city pays to every aspect of itself, to the attitude of the population. It's very progressive, it's very racially diverse, it's very activist. And I didn't realize that none of that was normal, so to speak, until I moved away.
So, I mean, for me, the book is really about parenthood, and in particular, motherhood and belonging, where one belongs in a family. And I'm going to ask you about that in just a moment. But I want to go back to Shaker Heights because the town itself is such a character in the book. And it's planned to the extent that in a certain way, it's a problematic how planned it is. It seems to create this expectation of what a quote-unquote normal family looks like. And I wonder if that's something that you thought about as only as an adult, or it's something that occurred to you when you were growing up there.
It really only occurred to me as an adult. The motto of the community is some communities just happen, the best are planned. It was actually one of the first planned communities in the United States, and they really thought about what they wanted an ideal community to look like. This was their sort of plan for what, you know, a little utopia would be out in the suburbs of Cleveland. And when I was growing up, that just seemed like the world to me. The fact that, as I mentioned in the novel, you don't ever put your garbage on the front curb on garbage collection day because that makes the street look messy, and we don't want that. So you keep the garbage at the back of your house, and the city actually has a fleet of little golf cart-sized garbage trucks that drive down each person's driveway, pick up the garbage in the back, and bring it out to the big garbage truck at the front. So the street never looks messy. That's so metaphorically rich to me that you have to keep so much of the unpleasant messiness of life hidden. That really wasn't something that seemed odd to me. I never thought about it until I moved away and people said, wait, explain your garbage situation to me again.
But But, you know, I wanted to read one passage in here where she's, this is Caroline talking about her childhood. And it says, Caroline grew up picnicking by the Shaker Lakes in the summer, skating on city flooded rinks in the winter, caroling at Christmas. She saw matinees of Song of the South and Anna and the King of Siam at the cinema at Shaker Square. And on special occasions, such as her birthday, her father took her to Stouffer's restaurant for a lobster luncheon. As a teenager, Caroline became the drum majorette for the school's marching band, went parking down by the canoe club with the boy who would become her husband a few years later. The part I want to pull out of that is that Shaker Heights, at least the one in your book, thinks of itself as being extremely progressive, and in many ways it is. But there's also a sort of a bubble quality to the kind of liberal progressiveness there. And I feel like that is a good example, that paragraph, because what she thinks of as seeing diverse movies is Song of the South and Anna and the King of the Siam. Both of those movies are pretty problematic.
Absolutely. And that was the sort of tension that I wanted to capture in this novel, that it's a community that is very racially progressive and it is quite racially integrated, and yet it still has all of these blind spots. And it was so fascinating to me. And I live right now in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which I think has a lot in common with Shaker Heights. We think of ourselves as being sort of exemplars. We're trying to, you know, be role models. And yet, of course, we have all these blind spots. There are all these things where we think we're being so progressive, and actually maybe we're not as progressive as we thought we were.
And this comes up, I don't want any spoilers, but I think it's fair to say that one of the biggest issues, not the biggest, but one of them, is the fight over the baby, whose name is either Mirabelle or Mei Ling.
Right, depending on which side of the case you know, your loyalties lie, exactly.
Right, either she belongs to the young, poor Chinese girl who gave birth to her and had to give her up when she was at a rough time, or she belongs with the perfect Shaker Heights husband and wife who can basically give her everything that she wants. And the attitudes toward where this baby belongs sort of unlocks everything else in the novel, people's ideas of belonging. That's what causes kind of everything else. Why the issue of a baby?
Well, I started off really with the idea of the community, and I started with the family, the Richardsons that live there, and then the mother and daughter who come in and kind of stir things up a little. And as I began to write about these two families, sort of thinking where they were going to come into conflict, the idea that this adoption question, this real question of where someone, a child, deserves to live, what kind of life they should be having, really encapsulated all of the aspects of the community and of this family conflict that I wanted to bring up. As you said, it brings up issues of class, it brings up issues of belongingness, it brings up issues of identity and race, of course. It seemed to bring all of that to a head. And one of the big ironies of the book, I think, is that even though this baby, Mei Ling, or Mirabelle, is at the center of this discussion, she's the only one who really doesn't get a voice in it. She's a baby, so she literally can't speak, but she also doesn't really have any say in what happens to her. Everyone is trying to decide what's best for her, and that was something that I wanted to explore.
Yeah, and there's this really interesting moment where two characters are having an argument about it, and one of them says, do you think if Mei Ling were grown up, she would make any choice other than to be with her own mother? And the other character basically doesn't answer that. There's no answer for that. And that's kind of, that comes up in other ways. One of Mrs. Richardson's daughters is faced with the same thing. She is empowered to start to think about that very question. Where do I belong? Where do I want to belong? How did you come to that? Was there a period of your life when you felt you didn't belong somewhere? Is that where this sort of, it seems to me, a pretty deep understanding of outsider status on your part?
Well, I think I spent a lot of my life feeling a little bit like an outsider. I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in the suburbs, and my family was the only Asian family that I knew. I was the only Asian kid in the school, and I was one of only two white kids in the school. And so I had this feeling always of being a little bit outside of the norm, or, you know, a little different from everyone else. else. Even in Shaker Heights, which, as I said, is pretty racially integrated in terms of black and white, there were very few Asians of any kind. And so again there, I felt a little bit removed from the discussions about race and sort of the understanding of how we look at race in America. And so when it came to this question of sort of, you know, where do you choose to belong, I wanted to look at the difference between the mothers that we get born to, who we obviously have ties to biology and maybe of you know, the way that they raise us, and then the sort of mother figures that we choose for ourselves. A lot of times I think that we have the experience of finding someone who understands us better than our own mother in some ways. And there's a little bit of internal conflict there where you go, well, this person isn't my mother, and yet she's giving me something that my mother isn't able to give me for whatever reason. That's a little bit what happens with the daughters in this book. They've all got their mothers, and then they're also picking other mothers who draw them for some reason.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with author Celeste Ng. Her new novel is Little Fires Everywhere. There's another thread, right? I mean, there's many threads, but there's another thread running through here of generosity. And I say that because at one point, Mrs. Richardson, who's very well off, she's the landlord for these two outsiders, this mother who's an artist and her pretty eclectic, independent daughter. Mrs. Richardson is their landlord, and she decides she wants to do something nice for this other woman. And so she hires her to be her maid, basically. Okay, now this is complicated for me and really interesting because in the end, the only reason the other woman becomes her maid is out of a feeling of generosity towards Mrs. Richardson. It's like Mrs. Richardson thinks she's being generous, but in the end, it's actually the other woman's empathy for her that allows her to do this. What were you trying to get at with this idea of charity?
Well, I have family members who have sort of worked in different kinds of service, food service and so on. I have friends who have. I was a terrible waitress when I was in college. But I've been really interested in the idea of, as you said, this idea of who's doing who a favor. It's very easy to think if you are the employer that you're being generous. You know, oh, well, I'm hiring you to do this sort of work. And if you're looking at it from the other perspective, you're maybe the one who's doing all the work if you've been the one who's been hired. And the idea of who is helping who and who's being generous to who, that is a big part of the dynamic between these two women and these two mothers.
And it comes up later because Mrs. Richardson is, I don't think she's nearly as generous as she thinks she is. She keeps tally of every nice thing she does for everybody.
Exactly, and it comes up, and it's one of those things that I think people do without realizing that they're doing it. You know, they do something because they think, well, this is a good thing to do. And yet later on, they realize maybe that they expect some kind of payback. And I think in some ways that's human nature. It's very rare to encounter sort of a true act of philanthropy with no strings attached whatsoever. And I think she's fooling herself a little bit by thinking that she's just doing this out of the goodness of her heart.
So you end the book, and again, no spoilers, but you end the book without answering a bunch of questions, which I totally understand from the perspective of this is what I'm writing for the reader. But I wonder if you yourself know what happens to them. Did you make that decision?
I have very rough ideas about what happened to the characters, again, without giving too much away. I have sort of ideas about how these characters are going to grow up and live their lives and what kinds of people they're going to become. And I hope, without, again, giving too much away, that these characters will have been really shaped by the events of the book, that this book will be sort of a turning point for them, and that their lives afterwards will be very different from having had these encounters and these experiences.
It's hard not to. I mean, the book begins with their house, the Richardson's house, being burnt to the ground. That's not a spoiler. That happens immediately. And we pretty much know who did it almost immediately. And then the question sort of is, why?
Exactly. I didn't want to pull punches. I didn't want to, you know, make the reader wonder, is something big going to happen? I wanted to let them know, yes, something big is going to happen, so that your attention can be focused on how did you get to this point? And I think really this is the story about hopefully how these families will sort of change each other.
So what has this journey been like for you, for a relatively new author who's seen incredible success, even with your very first novel, which is not just a tribute to your skill and your talent, but also, wow, that's really, I mean, you had the whole conglomeration of luck combined with talent and skill in writing the right book at the right time, right? So how has that been?
It's been very surreal. It's, as you said, I mean, you know, I think I wrote a good book, but that's not the only thing that leads you to success. You know, there are so many good books out there, and there's so much luck, and there's so much help from other people and hard work and, I don't know, you know, unicorn dust that goes into, you know, a book doing well. I'm really grateful that the book has found its audience, but I still sometimes have a hard time believing that that actually happens. You know, every time someone tells me that they've read my book, I'm a little bit surprised that they've found my book. And, you know, that's actually really humbling to me because I sort of like, you read this? Thank you. Thank you so much for reading it.
Is it a blessing or a curse to have so much success with your very first novel? Does that make it easier or harder to write the second one?
It's both. I mean, I certainly would never complain about it and don't mean to complain about it. The way that I try to look at it is that I feel like I've now got a lot of readers sort of in my corner who are willing to, you know, follow me into another world. And it puts pressure on me because I don't want to disappoint them. But at the same time, it also makes me feel like they're there sort of cheering me on and saying, okay, go for it. Try something and we'll at least give it a try.
So you have a son of your own?
I do, yes.
Would you ever move back to Shaker Heights?
It's an interesting question because a number of my high school classmates have moved back and to raise their families. I don't think I will because we're pretty settled where we are in Cambridge. And a lot of the things that I love about Shaker Heights, sort of the diversity and the sort of cultural spirit that the town embodies, we have here. There is a part of me that always wants to go back. I don't know if it's just nostalgia for the hometown or if it is about Shaker Heights in particular, but it's sort of the ideal in my mind that I measure all the places that I live against, and so that temptation maybe will always be there.
That's Celeste Ng, author of the new novel, Little Fires Everywhere. She will appear for a reading at SCAD Show in Atlanta tonight at 7 p.m.